Välkomna till Studio DN. Ja, protesterna mot polisvåld mot svarta i USA har pågått i nästan 2 veckor nu. Massdemonstrationer äger rum över hela landet. Idag ska vi prata med Evelyn Hochstein. Hon är amerikansk frilansfotograf i Washington DC och har arbetat på uppdrag av bland andra Dagens Nyheter och The Washington Post. Ja, protesterna i USA fortsätter. Politiska bedömare och aktivister jämför dagens demonstrationer med rasrelaterade protester och kravaller på 60-talet och vad som kan vara annorlunda den här gången. De senaste dygnen har protesterna varit lugna och stora. Det har väckt ny oro också för en andra våg av spridning av covid-19. I Washington har dragkampen mellan Vita huset och District of Columbia, som är den administrativa staden, ställts på sin spets. Borgmästaren i DC, Muriel Bowser, har låtit byta namn på flera platser i Washington och låtit måla texten Black Lives Matter med 10 meter stora gula bokstäver på en gata som leder rakt mot Vita huset. Evelyn Hochstein är frilansfotograf i Washington och har bevakat protesterna sedan de tog fart. Hon har lång erfarenhet av att bevaka medborgarrätt och mänskliga rättigheter i USA och i andra länder. Hi Evelyn.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. You're a freelance photographer based in DC. You have covered a number of protests over the years. And in DC, the protests were initially partly violent, but they have calmed down. Can you just describe what you've seen and photographed the latest few days?
It has been really a remarkable transition. It started off quite remarkably, and it did turn into a few chaotic nights. But overall, I would say it's been quite peaceful. And the past several days and nights have been quite beautiful displays of unity, call for change, action, anger, frustration, really every human emotion. And it's been very powerful to witness. And considering that I think we're on day 11 in Washington, D.C., it's been going on longer in other cities, the number of people each night keeps growing, or each day, I should say. And it's really quite a testament to how the death of George Floyd has sparked such a renewed, I wouldn't say renewed exactly, it's always existed, but just a renewed desire to say, hey, things aren't working, things aren't changing, this keeps going on, we've got to stop this, we've got to put an end to police brutality, Black Lives Matter, and it's been remarkable to witness, truly, and the fact that it's global, I think that's really incredible as well.
So who is out there protesting, really? Are they young, old, white, black?
Everybody. It's, I think that's really spectacular to see. You know, of course, there are a lot of African Americans, but really everybody is out there. You can't say, I would say that everybody is represented. All Americans, some segment of all of the American population is out there. And a lot of other issues come to the forefront. You know, people bring their own issues and carry them alongside the Black Lives Matter movement. So you'll see signs for gay rights. You'll see signs for trans rights. You'll see signs for Palestinian rights. I mean, there's just everybody's out there. And this has been a real catalyst for really what I think has morphed into an anti-Trump, anti-establishment type movement, which was spurred on by Black Lives Matter.
This is what one of them said. This man is called John Allen, and you recorded him the other day.
I've seen it repeatedly. Trayvon Martin, the jogger in North Carolina that was chased for 4 minutes and then shot in the back. I mean, there are just too many instances of poor behavior on the part of the police, and it's just unfortunate. And if any time the country needed a leader, it would be now. And he doesn't lead. He divides.
Would you say that this man is representative from the stories you hear from white people come out?
Absolutely. I think that probably that is the main thrust of the people out on the street, or that President Trump sitting in the White House is not healing this nation or bringing this nation together, but rather dividing the nation and not really understanding acting on all of the instances of police brutality. And people are extremely frustrated. And that's what has fueled this rage and this anger and brought people to the streets. And I think that most people are feeling that the White House has provided no leadership from what I've heard from people on the street.
You also told me before that the White House used to be very accessible for people. And now over the events during the past week or 10 days or so, there's increased fencing. And can you tell me what has happened with that fence?
This has really been quite stunning. You know, Washington, D.C. and most government, I mean, the United States government should be accessible to the people. So in Washington, D.C., you can go into the U.S. Capitol, you can go into the congressional buildings, you can knock on your congressman or your senator's door. They may or may not be there, but you have access to the people that represent you. And the White House has always been called the people's house. You could walk right up to the fence. You could take photographs. The fence has gotten, you know, very close to the lawn of the White House, has grown in years just because there have been cases of people jumping the fence or even, in fact, getting into the White House when President Obama was in office. But now, and in front of the White House is Lafayette Square Park, which is a beautiful park and a place where people would come throughout history to gather and protest and make their voices heard. That entire park now, and I don't know how many hundreds of meters it is away from the actual White House, has been blocked. The White House has been encircled by a massive black fence, double fencing in some places. And it's obscured and not only blocked access for people. So people are now protesting in the streets. And I just think that is new in history. And it's just not representative of what kind of protest that what the United States and the protest movements are about and freedom of speech. Perhaps President Trump felt threatened by protesters, but this fencing goes beyond the boundaries of the White House. This goes onto public, net park, basically, and is preventing people from even getting close.
And it's become a place for art now.
It has. So now this entire fence, which I think initially probably President Trump thought was a symbol of strength, and which I think really enrages people because people are trying to bring a message to the government and they're so far removed. And he's created this barrier. It's like, I'm not listening to you. I'm not hearing you. I don't want to see you. I've pushed you so far away. Your message is not reaching me, which I believe people are feeling. But now this fence, which I presume he must have felt, you know, was the symbol of strength that, you know, you can't, you know, push into my space and this show of force, people have turned into an art space. So they've hung posters and photographs and slogans and flowers and balloons and messages and drawings. I mean, everything all along. And a huge Black Lives Matter banner is right and directly in front of the White House, which is really just Black Lives Matter and the White House. It's just a stark juxtaposition. And so I think it's ironic because now it's really become like a very symbolic anti-Trump place message board, in addition to a memorial to George Floyd and all the others that have been killed in police brutality incidences. But now I think the president probably wants to take it down because it's a daily reminder of anti-Trump sentiment.
When we come back, we'll talk more about the protest in the United States. So this is interesting because there's been this standoff also between the White House and the D.C. mayor, Muriel Bowser. The city renamed streets and the plaza with Black Lives Matter. This is what Muriel Bowser said.
Well, we've commissioned the artwork. We renamed the plaza, and I'm thankful to the council for codifying that renaming to Black Lives Matter Plaza. We think it's going to have a central place, not in just DC history, but in American history. And we should be proud of it.
So Muriel Bowser herself, African-American, is a mayor in Washington, D.C., which is a very liberal city. What were their reactions to these initiatives?
I think it was very mixed. I mean, it was certainly exhilarating when I saw it in the morning. It's so big, and it's like this just giant protests. I don't know how to say protest. I was trying to think of another example, but it's probably not appropriate for the podcast. But, you know, it's very striking. I mean, it just pointing straight at the White House saying, you know, we're getting our message across and you can't stop us and your fencing isn't going to prevent us from doing that. Because it does say Black Lives Matter, there are mixed feelings about it because I think the Black Lives Matter movement are saying that they don't necessarily feel heard by Muriel Bowser. I think people are certainly appreciative that she stood up to Donald Trump and it was a grand and dramatic gesture. And very brave and sort of saying these are our, you know, Washington, D.C., this is our turf and not your turf. And it's the people's turf and people have the right to protest. So she was standing up for the First Amendment. But Black Lives Matter certainly feel like their message may have been co-opted. She used their slogan. They are calling for defunding of the police. Washington, D.C. has, you know, a fairly strong police force. I think it's a city going through a lot of gentrification issues. So there are issues, social justice issues that are happening in the city. So I think those issues, maybe some Black Lives Matter and other protesters didn't appreciate her. But then they responded by adding their own mural to the end of the mural that said defund the police. So it was sort of a counter message. And that's still there. It hasn't been removed or anything like that. I think it's just this is Black Lives Matter Plaza is a space she created for ideas and protests to happen until this fence comes down.
There has been a number of incidents on attacks of reporters and photojournalists over the past couple of weeks. What attitudes have you met as a photographer? You're usually in the very front line.
Yeah, I've seen terrible footage. I have been okay. I mean, the first few nights of clashes, certainly when I was photographing the protesters, I was getting hit by pepper pellets and pepper spray, and I was in the thick of it. And I do feel like, you know, if you got too close, the police certainly would fire, you know, I'm clearly identifiable as a journalist, but I wouldn't be spared just like the protesters. And I got hit quite a bit with these pepper pellets. But I didn't feel personally targeted. Because I was a journalist and I also felt very good in the crowd. And I have certainly felt a lot of anti-media sentiment in the past few years and threatened while covering other events where we're considered to be the fake news and the crowds can really turn against the media. I've been welcomed here in these crowds. I think people want their experiences documented. I mean, perhaps when the looting was happening, things like that, people don't want their photographs taken or their faces shown, but I didn't feel hostility. However, I didn't feel the brunt of it. There was an Australian camera crew that was attacked and hit right outside the White House on the day that President Trump was moving the protesters out of the streets in order to go to the church and do his Bible photo op. And I was pushed back with a crowd, and that was quite dramatic. And there was a lot of tear gas and a very strong show of force. But it wasn't until after that I saw this cameraman getting hit in the face. So that sort of made me realize, okay, I've got to, you know, be careful and be aware there is a chance to be, you know, knocked down by the police. But I felt like as long as I was moving with the crowd when they were pushing us back, I felt okay. But clearly I was maybe naive about that because there were incidences of violence against journalists.
Yeah. You covered also the events in Charlottesville in 2017. Can you just quickly, did you feel more threatened there because it was another crowd or... was it?
I felt tense, very tense in Charlottesville. Again, I didn't specifically feel targeted because I was a journalist, but it was also extremely chaotic. I mean, I felt threatened in other ways. You know, I did have a few times people, you know, kind of, they didn't touch me, but they certainly put their hands in front of the camera. And in Charlottesville, I got it from both sides. I got some Antifa who were not interested in having their photos taken, and they're very aggressive about not being photographed. And then I also got a lot of anti-Semitic hatred. I mean, I don't, you know, people just made assumptions about me and said some really awful things about being Jewish and the media and all these terrible anti-Semitic tropes. So I did have that, and that was quite scary, but I didn't feel physically threatened. However, in Charlottesville, I was constantly worried because everyone there was armed that if, you know, any anybody just decided to shoot, it would just turn into a bloodbath. Now, again, in Charlottesville, someone weaponized a vehicle and drove it into a crowd and killed Heather Heyer and injured, you know, scores of people. So there are always these real threats. But, at, you know, in the moment when I'm doing my job, I haven't personally felt, I didn't feel totally under threat. But, you know, I wear a helmet. I take precautions. I'm quite aware. I try to be cautious. Yeah. So
just a last question. Do you think that this time around it's different this time with the protest? I mean, you've been covering this for many years.
Oh, you know, I hope people are very enraged. They're out on the street. They want their voices heard. We have an election coming in November. And I think people, they're focusing their message on, you know, we need change and we have to vote and we'll see what happens in November. And I certainly hope for all the people that want change and want police departments to change and want reforms in policing and violence to end and end of racism and bet more equality. I mean, we're all hoping for that. And I think a testament will certainly be what happens in November.
Thank you so much, Evelyn. Stay safe.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
För ljudillustrationerna stod AP och Evelyn Hochstein. Studio DN görs av producent Sabina Marakaj, exekutivproducent Augustin Erba, ljudtekniker Patrik Miesenberger och teknik Jonas Lindskog, Bauer Media. Jag heter Sanna Thorén Björling.